Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court, for the record, I'm Kent Masters, representing Jose Jimenez. I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. Our central point here in this third-party action is that there were genuine issues of material fact on the key issues that precluded summary judgment in this case. The legal linchpin for that argument is Fisher and cases all the way up to Hildahl, which say that we focus on the employee, not on the employer. And the error that the trial court made here was being focused on the employer and corporate forms that were quite confusing, instead of focusing on the employee and asking the two key questions: did Superior Floors exercise control over Mr. Jimenez's work? And second, did Mr. Jimenez consent to the employment with Superior Floors? The evidence is very strong that neither one of those factors is met. On control, both Mr. Jimenez and Mr. Hernandez testified that no one at Superior Floors or anyone else, frankly, on this $1.5 million project exercised any control over his work whatsoever. Both of them testified that they were told, go do that, and then it was up to them to do it. They brought their own equipment, they used their own tools, and most significantly, they were not provided with any safety equipment whatsoever on this site. That is very significant because Mr. Strijhaus, Pavel Strijhaus, testified at CP 736 that Superior Floors was the general contractor on this project, and there is no dispute that there was no anchoring for these ladders that they were climbing up with several hundred-pound window, two ladders unsecured. They had no fall protection gear. That's undisputed. Neither one of them did. Pretty remarkably, Mr. Strijhaus, Pavel Strijhaus, testified that the only employee of Superior Floors on this site was my client. The guy on the other ladder carrying the 350-pound window apparently was not. I don't know whose employee he was supposed to be. The truth is there's no evidence, not a single piece of evidence. There is testimony from the brothers, so let me be clear. But other than that, there's not a single piece of documentary evidence in this record showing that my client was an employee of Superior Floors. Mr. Hernandez testified that he was told, you are being employed under the same conditions as Mr. Jimenez. You're employed by NDTS. That was my client's understanding. And his subjective belief, so there's control, and there's no evidence of control whatsoever. And then there's consent, and both Mr. Hernandez and Mr. Jimenez say, we did not consent. In fact, my client says, I never heard of Superior Floors until my lawyer told me they were the general contractor. Now, he did say many times that he worked for Pacific Huts, but then you get, for instance, in the complaint, I think I have a quote from the complaint here. Well, maybe not. Let me look here. It says essentially he worked for Pacific Huts, which was a subsidiary. At one time he uses subsidiaries, one time he uses DBA, of both NDTS and Superior Floors. Why is he doing that? Well, he has no idea. Of course, this is information that's uniquely in the control of the corporations, and so he's just saying, on information and belief, I think that these entities are related.
At the time of the accident,
yes, sure.
One would think that there would be some effort to determine who filled that form out that went to the Department of Labor and Industries. It looks like it was filled out by the doctor.
That's what Mr. Jimenez felt. He broke his right arm.
Written in there that Pacific Hudson Castles is the employer. But who told the doctor that was so?
We don't know. Might have been Mr. Hernandez. We really don't know. But what we do know is Pacific Hudson in Castles is a DBA, it's not a corporation, and that in 2012, NDTS was the licensed registered owner of that DBA, not Superior Floors. Now, they want to argue that in some backroom deal, They had traded this over. They actually got cited, Superior Floors, for using that DBA later without registering it. But the evidence, the hard evidence in this record, is clear that that belonged to NDTS. So it's perfectly reasonable for my client to subjectively believe that he's employed by NDTS, and he did. And that is a question of fact. That raises a genuine issue of material fact on consent.
There's evidence in the record that NDTS went through an administrative dissolution for failure, presumably, to file their report or something like that. Was there any other form of a formal resolution or other dissolution, termination of business by NDTS?
Not that I know of, Your Honor, and I'd like to point out my Appendix C to my reply brief, which is the reinstatement of NDTS during the period that my client was employed by NDTS. I think that is a legal matter, Your Honor, if we're going to focus on the employer, which we don't focus on the employer here, and if we're going to get into legal niceties about the existence, reinstating this corporation during the time my client alleges he was employed there makes them legally liable for this accident.
What is the big picture here in terms of I guess Mr. MS was working as sort of temporary occasional labor. I mean, the
day labor
was that he was paid out of the petty cash fund.
Right.
I'm going to assume here that that's not completely unheard of. That this is something that happens, and so does this mean then that when people go to work on a job where they just kind of show up and get a day's work and get paid cash at the end of the day, and nobody really has them on the books at all as an employee, that they can just kind of pick any entity that appears later on in the record and say, okay, this one was my employer and the other one wasn't, so I'm going to have both workers' comp and third-party action.
Yeah, Your Honor, even in my small firm, I'm seeing quite a bit of this, the attempt by a corporation to use the shell, you know, and say, oh, well, you're employed here. No, you're employed over there. It's happening quite a bit for our undocumented day laborers. I think that we should be more concerned about protecting the worker under the LNI statute, and that should be the focus. And you focus on his subjective intent.
The employer is what? I mean, to what extent is the answer to put everybody on the
list? You know, he was paid cash. I won't go into what's going on there. But if you want to document that he's working for Superior Floors, give him a check that says Superior Floors on it. Cash is cash. And he has no way of knowing that somewhere on books, somewhere in the back, the brothers are saying, oh, no, Superior Floors is paying this cash. Tell him he's employed by Superior Floors. Give him something that indicates that. Record him somewhere on your books. Something. There's no evidence. So we ask you to reverse and remand for trial. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
Jeremy Rogers on behalf of Respondent Superior Floors. And we're here to ask that the trial court's ruling of summary judgment dismissal be affirmed. And I think the issue is more straightforward than appellant presents. It's not necessarily a consent and control. It's whether NDTS was in business operation on the day of this incident, and it wasn't. And we know that because of the objective evidence in the record. The record establishes that the business license for NDTS was suspended as of August 2011. The record also supports that they were administratively dissolved as of October 3rd, 2011. At that point, or sometime later in 2011-2012, Superior Floors began using the trade name Pacific Huts, and that's the entity under which Mr. Jaimes was working on the day of the incident.
How did he know that? Is it not important for him to know that?
I'm not quite sure how he knew what the business structure was, but his understanding, based on the record and what he testified to, was that he was working for Pacific Huts. Whether, and that's a trade name, whether it's legally owned by NDTS, which wasn't in operation, or was being used by Superior Floors. His subjective understanding was that he worked for Pacific Huts. And the consequences of that is that...
Does he not need to know that Pacific Huts is a DBA for Superior Floors? It doesn't matter. Or are you saying that if he wanted to know exactly what his employment situation was, and knowing that he was working for something called Pacific Huts, he had an obligation to go and search L&I and other state records to find out who exactly Pacific Huts was? Are you saying that it was his responsibility?
I'm not saying that it's his responsibility, no.
Well, I mean, how do you get to consent otherwise?
It's...
How can you consent to working for somebody if you don't know who they are?
Well, he consented to work for Pacific Huts, and that was being controlled by, at the time.
Okay, but the issue is here is you want to say that he was working for Superior Floors.
That's correct.
So you're telling me that, well, it's obvious that he was working for Pacific Huts, and he knew that. So how do you get from there to, well, then he obviously knew and consented that he was working for Superior Floors when he'd never heard of Superior Floors, taking all the facts in the light most favorable to him?
Well, it's difficult to say and answer that question because there isn't a Washington law case on point. There isn't a case that says if the plaintiff subjectively believed that he was working for a DBA, that it automatically, you work for...
Do you want us to write that case? Is that what you're asking us to hold so that there can be that precedent in the law?
I'm not necessarily asking for new law. I'm just saying...
Okay, you're not asking for new law. There isn't any old law that you can point to. And this is summary judgment. So why not let a jury decide whether he consented?
Because we don't have to get there just yet, because there is no other entity for which he could work. NDTS was not...
Well, that's not part of his burden, though. I mean, the question for a jury would be, am I correct? The jury would be asked to decide, did Mr. Jaimez work for Superior Floors on the date that he was injured? Okay, so they're not... The jury verdict form doesn't say, did he work for NDTS? That's not the question. He's suing Superior Floors.
That's correct. Okay. So the jury form would say, did he work for Superior Floors?
No. Did he consent to work for Superior Floors?
He consented to work for Superior Floors by virtue of working for the people that controlled Superior Floors and who were doing business as Pacific Huts.
Seems like your syllogism is he had to be working for somebody. The only one standing is Superior Floors by virtue of this other evidence. Therefore, he must have consented to working for Superior Floors. But we normally would look at consent based on an objective manifestation of, and isn't it hard to say, well, Pacific Huts had to mean Superior Floors?
That is my argument in part, that his subjective belief has to be based on a reasonable interpretation of that. So for him to subjectively believe that he worked for an entity that no longer exists or wasn't doing business operations isn't reasonable. The only entity that was left standing that was in control of Pacific Huts at the time was Superior Floors.
Well, I mean, but... The question is, who did he consent to work for? Right? That's the question.
Right.
I mean, he could have, why couldn't a jury decide, well, he thought he was working for Mr. Timothy Streifus, the guy that hired him. How's he supposed to know that Timothy Streifus was somebody that was actually Superior Floors when the word Superior Floors was not mentioned? And as counsel points out, there's no check. There's no W-2 form. There's nothing on the books. The testimony was this is the only employee they ever had in their entire life, but he was their employee. And what about that question, by the way? What about Mr. Hernandez? Was he an employee of Superior Floors?
That I don't know and I can't answer because it's not clearly established in the record.
Well, when things are not clearly established in the record, isn't that when things are ripe for trial as opposed to summary judgment?
Ordinarily, but in this situation, based on the evidence that was presented, summary judgment was right. The only entity that he could have worked for at that time, legal entity, was Superior Floors, doing business as Pacific Huts. That's established in the contract that was signed, is in the record, for which this house was being built on August 27, 2012.
Did you show that contract to, did your client show that contract to Mr. Hamas before he began to work?
That I don't know.
So he wouldn't have known about that contract, unless you have evidence that he did.
The evidence isn't clear in the record whether that contract was shown to him or not.
Is there anything in the record to explain why NDTS decided to reinstate their previously dissolved corporation?
No, there's not.
Yeah. Does that allow an inference that they were back in business and maybe had continued to be in business?
I'm not quite sure what that inference would be exactly, and I'm not sure why they reestablished themselves as that. But the fact is that that entity was not in operation on the particular day of this incident. The only entity that was operational was Superior Floors, doing business as Pacific Huts. There is case law that says where there is really no dispute whether a worker was employed, we don't have to get to the Nevison two-factor test. That's the Ackley case and the Stettler case, I believe.
Which cases? Say that again. Ashley Bell, is it?
And Stettler.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Relying on those two cases.
And their holding is what? What is the holding that you think they preclude us to getting to the
That where there's no dispute whether the worker was employed by a particular entity, you don't have to get to the Nevison analysis. And if we don't get there, we don't have to get to the subjective understanding of Mr. Jaimes at that particular time. There's no dispute that he was a worker on this particular day, and the entity that he happened to be working for was Superior Floors. And there's no dispute about that on that particular day. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
With due respect, there's definitely a dispute on that. That's our whole point. Mr. Jaimes believed he was working for NDTS. I wanted to answer your question, Your Honor. On that, it's Appendix C to my reply on that reinstatement. It says Mr. Timothy Strahos swears under oath that the grounds for dissolution either did not exist or have been eliminated. That by itself creates a genuine issue of material fact if he swears under oath that they didn't exist. And then he also swears that there has not been a transfer of stock or other financial interest change or an option agreement exercised during the last 12 months. This is 10 days after my client fell off the ladder that he's reinstating this. And he's swearing there wasn't any kind of change in the last 12 months. Frankly, you could grant summary judgment to us based on that evidence. Obviously, the employer has the burden to show control and consent. That's Rodau. There must be clear evidence of control and consent. That's Rodau. It is not sufficient to show that the arrangement was thrust upon the employee. That's very well established in Novenson. Consent can not be imputed. That's also Novenson. The nature of a relationship, unless it is totally undisputed, which it is not here, creates a genuine issue of material fact. Again, that's Rodau. Subjective belief alone is sufficient to create a genuine issue of fact. That's Rodau. There is quite a bit of law on that. So unless you have any questions, I'd ask you to reverse and remand for trial.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next up is Hamlet versus Labor and Industries.